Set, go, station. Okay. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, the 26th of June. We'd like to acknowledge everyone here and thank you for your attendance. And please join the board as we honor our nation with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. I wanted to let you know that Supervisor Sanders is on his way. His plane landed in Des Moines at 9:15, and he texted us up a little bit and said he is planning to join us as soon as possible. So there are a few items on the agenda that I'm sure he particularly wanted to be present when they were being discussed. So I will use a little flexibility in terms of the order that we may cover some of these items for the benefit of having him here. So just wanted to acknowledge that that may be just a little bit of a change from what you see before you. The next item of business is item number 3, is a consideration of the minutes of 6/12/12 and the minutes in canvas of 6/19/12.
Move approval of both.
And I will second that. Are there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Minutes are approved for 6/12 and the canvas of 6/19. Item number 4 is public comment number 1. This is an opportunity for members to address the board on topics on today's agenda. I would want to call to your attention that there is a item 4 on the consent agenda that the board will pull for discussion regarding a manure management plan similar to what we've dealt with in the last couple board meetings. So just for your knowledge, there will be an opportunity for discussion on that topic. So with that, if there's anyone that would like to address the board on any topic that is on the board agenda, you may do so now or later. Well, welcome. No speeding ticket, huh?
Okay. Moving pretty good.
All right. Good deal. All right. So is there anyone that would like to address us at this time on another topic? Okay. Seeing none, one, then we'll move on to other reports. This is a special time for us. This is where Deb Shilroth, our CPC, wants to recognize an individual for their years of service as a member of the asset team. So, Deb, why don't you come on forward, and we'll hear what you have to say. You can go either place.
Can we...
Rick, are you good at taking pictures of this thing?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, great.
I would like to ask the board if we can table this, as the person receiving the award has not arrived yet.
Not arrived. Yes, we can certainly do so.
Okay.
All right, we can delay that. Thank you. We'll come back to that. So let us know when she's here.
All right.
Okay, then let's the next item, Deb, you might as well hang on. It's continued discussion and consideration of the mental health disability service funding cuts for FY 12-13. Okay.
Good morning. Welcome back, Rick.
Thank you.
Per our discussion and May meeting about the revenue loss from the state that's effective July 1st of 2012, we had some discussion at that meeting about cuts and waiting lists and things that we were going to have to do to the MHDD budget in order to manage things a little bit better for the upcoming fiscal year. And three of the services that we talked about looking at cutting include the ARCS Respite and Active Lifestyles Program, legal aids representation that they provide to our MHDD clients, and then the Wellness Center that's operated currently through NAMI. And so we talked about those services, the potential cuts, and the board gave direction to me to meet with those agencies and explore those cuts a little bit different or a little bit more and find out what kinds of contingency plans those agencies may have if indeed we have to move forward with those cuts. In conjunction to that, we also had discussion about the transition funds. There's a process in legislation that was passed about applying for such funds, although the funds technically are not designated at this point in time and won't be until the legislature convenes for the 2013 session, and that part has not changed. At the MHDD Commission meeting last Thursday, we had DHS Director Chuck Palmer there to talk a little bit about those funds. The source of those funds will be federal dollars, and there could be up to $20 million available for counties to apply for to help get through fiscal year 13 and address any service cuts or waiting lists, that sort of thing. The application process still stands. Applications will be due by October 15th, and then the Department of Human Services will take a look at those applications and submit a report to the General Assembly and the governor as to how much money is being requested and for what purposes. And a couple other parts to that is there's a transition committee that has been formed. Again, that was developed through legislation, and I talked with Representative Heddens yesterday, and she has been appointed as one of the legislators to that committee. And another piece of the transition is receiving technical assistance through the Department of Human Services, and Story County has its first TA visit with DHS this Thursday. And they'll be at my office at 9 o'clock, and you're welcome to participate in that discussion. They are primarily at this point looking at what our budget and our finances are for fiscal year 13. They want to ensure counties are using as much Medicaid within their systems as possible. So those are the things that will be primarily discussed at that meeting.
Paul, you or Rick, if either of you are available, I have a meeting in Des Moines at 9:30 that I need to be at. So if either of you are available and want to set in on that meeting, I would appreciate it if possible. Okay? Go on, Deb.
Okay. So back to the agencies and the services. I met with Tricia Crane, who is with us this morning, and talked with her about the special recreation, the active lifestyles program, and the respite. The county funding for that for fiscal year 13 is $31,200. And she's been in conversations with the City of Ames and United Way of Story County about what kinds of assistance they could provide to help lessen the cuts to those programs. She's also looking at increasing fees and dues to help make up a little bit of the difference. It won't make up a lot, but it would help, and it's something that her board's considering. And they're also they've been receiving an ongoing state grant. They apply for it every 3 years, and she said that the state grant could help cover some of the costs of the respite program. So those are some of the contingencies that she is looking at in terms of special recreation and respite services.
But, however, the grant is just an application process. There's no assurance. And what type of what kind of money is probably anticipated if the grant is awarded? Do you have an idea?
They have applied for the grant, and they have been awarded.
Oh, it has been. Yeah. Okay, great.
And Tricia, correct me if I'm wrong. It's between $30,000 and $40,000 for the fiscal year. And it's called Children at Home. Story County is one of, I believe, 6 or 9 counties that receives those dollars. And here in Story County, those dollars have always been administered through the ARC of Story County.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Okay, great.
Legal aid, the dollar amount there is about $35,800. I met with Bev Ross and Jay Kamath, and they are looking at reducing staff hours, using Jay in more of a capacity of performing administrative duties if Bev's hours are reduced, and which would then that time would then be taken up with those administrative duties, and he would have less time to deal with some of the legal matters that he's been working on with clients. They're looking at reducing staff benefits, They're going to talk to their board about collecting on SSI cases that they that come up with a favorable decision. What that means is if the SSI case is approved, legal aid could recoup some of their legal fees. They haven't done that in the past because those legal fees have been funded through through the asset process, through the county in various ways. And so they're going to go back and take a look at, and I think there's a cap on what they can collect on those SSI cases, but she said they'd be visiting with that or on that with their board. They're also looking at alternative funding sources. They do have reserves. It's something that has taken about 20 years to build up, but they have reserves, and it's not something that they can rely on year after year. It's not that much of a pot of money, but it's something that could help them get through fiscal year 13. The other thing that she said she would do, since we do fund legal aid also through local option dollars and the general fund, she'd be shifting some of those MHDD cases to that particular funding source. And so that means they could be going through their allocation from the county a lot quicker. So they're hoping to not have to deny or put anybody in a waiting list or deny somebody services, but that's how they're looking at approaching fiscal year 13. And then NAMI and the Wellness Center, that amount from the county was $3,000. And Deb Niehoff, I visited with her, and she was going to visit with United Way of Story County. If you remember, it was the United Way of Story County's endowment fund that got the Wellness Center off the ground about a year ago. She was going to go back and talk to Jean Cressy about the possibility of United Way picking up that $3,000 for next fiscal year. Are there any questions or comments at this point?
This is the type of question that I hate to even throw out at this point, but it just came to me, so I have to ask. As we work with United Way, City of Ames, and other funding entities during this transition period or time of consideration of whether or not there would be adequate funding to continue these programs, would the county, as we look at how we allocate dollars, be in a situation where if, say, United Way was able to cover a certain portion for a time period and then later on we would maybe have dollars that we could apply back toward that? It's kind of that the agencies working cooperatively together, where one may have the resources that they could apply, and then we would be able to work with them at a later time. I don't know if we've ever done that. I don't know if it's proper to do, but I want to throw it out for us to, with having all the funding groups at the table, recognizing that any drastic cuts to these programs that we've identified will have some drastic impact on the clients that they serve, and we want to try to mitigate that as much as possible. So I asked you to consider that, and I hadn't had a chance to ask or mention it to either of these. It just came to my attention. But if it's feasible for us to consider, I'd like to have us consider that discussion and then talk about ways in which we could be able to assist if we need to, if it got to be in that dire situation. Good.
Yeah, Wayne, I'd like to just piggyback on that, and Deb, ask you, as I understand our situation right now, we feel like, based on what we know, that this is an FY13 problem. For FY14, again, based on what we know about how things are going to be funded, we're not talking about permanent cuts to these areas. We're talking about trying to get through FY13. Is that accurate?
Correct.
And if there is actually $20 million in transition funds at the state and the transition committee goes through and determines in January that we are, in fact, entitled to a portion of those transition funds, those could come in to at least fund from that part of the remainder of FY13. My question is, first of all, is that accurate? And secondly, would it be possible to go in and backfill if, in fact, we identified transition funds? What I'm trying to get to in my mind, Deb, is are we trying to find a way to get through the first 6 months of FY13 And then based on what the transition committee does in the state, either we're good for the last 6 months or we've got to do some serious cutting, or are we looking at it differently than that?
I think that's a correct way to look at it, Rick. One of the things that has to happen for the transition fund is that there need to be rules written about it, and the Department of Human Services and the commission are responsible for doing that, and we're going to start working on that next month. One of the things that Director Palmer said to us at our meeting last Thursday was because the source of the transition funds are federal dollars, those dollars cannot be used to pay for match bills. So what that means is we can't apply for those dollars and say that we're going to use them to pay for our state bills, our ID waiver match, our case management match, our habilitation match, because the federal dollars can't be used to pay for programs that are shared between the feds and the state. So, but yet we're continued to be told by the state, well, hold your state bills if you're going to have cash flow problems. So we've got that to sort out. We also have, then we'll clip along and try to pay for the other bills that have nothing to do with the state, just our other provider and service type bills. But it may end up being that we have to hold some of those too until we know more about the transition fund. And as we're trying to get through fiscal year 13, we'll start planning for fiscal year 14, which, remember, the levy part changes. We'll still be, for fiscal year 14, we'll still be maximizing our levy at the $3 million mark, and then we should be eligible then for about $1.2 million in state funding to backfill that. The thing we have to look at is that going to meet our budgetary needs? And that's something that Gayla and I, when we talk with Robin Wilson come Thursday, that we're going to have to really take a hard look at.
But we're talking about $0 for FY13 unless the transition funds come through, other than our $3 million.
Exactly. And revenue that comes in through Medicaid for our case management program, which pretty much just carries that program.
Right.
There's not a lot of extra. And then revenues that Community Life receives from Voc Rehab, from Medicaid, other small various sources.
Based on what we know of these three programs that we're talking about cutting, would they qualify as a request for the transition funds, or are they matched by the state?
Oh, they would qualify. Yes. Yep. Yeah. The state isn't. They're not Medicaid funded, and so there's no match there. So they would definitely qualify.
So then I'm going to go back to what Wayne was talking about a few minutes ago. It seems to me that this is an opportunity for all of the asset funders to sit down together and say, "Hey, we got real issues for the first 6 months of the year, and if the transition funding comes through, which I know I'm not willing to bank on it coming through. I hope it comes through, but if it comes through, then we should be able to reinstate funding for these things for the last half of the fiscal year." But again, just trying to minimize. I mean, I think all three of us are just trying so hard to minimize the impact this is going to have. And everything I'm seeing, we're one of five or six counties in the state of Iowa that they expect will be upside down in this transition. And so hopefully we'll have a large share of whatever transition funds become available. But I hate to bank on anything with our friends down in Des Moines.
Well, that was the comment that I had heard, that it'll be a new crop of legislators that come in January. And, I mean, it'll be up to them what they want to do. But there's, I don't know, I don't have a lot of faith. I think they'll probably put some money in it, but who knows how much and if it's going to be enough.
Well, and the other thing, too, and we talked about this on Thursday, is, let's say Story County asks, this is an arbitrary figure, but let's say we ask for $1 million to help reinstate services and address anyone we have on the waiting
list.
That's
right.
The other piece to this. There's no guarantee we're going to get that million. The committee may decide, or DHS may decide, yeah, we looked through your application and we saw, what you wrote, and we have to have a sustainability plan along with that application. They may decide that we're only going to get $500,000. I mean, so there's that piece to all of this as well. There's no guarantee that if the funds are there that you're going to get the amount that you're asking for. It's a little bit different than I know the risk pool wrestled with some of that as well throughout the years.
Yeah, because of the there were some things that didn't qualify that counties submitted requests for. And so, as you say, you have to clearly make sure that those items that are those dollars are requested for meet the criteria that is laid out by the guidelines that are imposed in this transition funding. You know, obviously, I think the legislature really has put themselves in a position where to renege on coming through and helping in this case would not look very favorable, and I think they're going to have to really make this a priority coming of the new year again. But the question is we just have no knowledge of how much, and if we go back and use the scenario with the risk pool fund that I was a member of, they originally talked about $25 million early on, and then when they got the reports from all the counties based on need, that number was reduced to $10 million. And then of the $10 million that was allocated, almost $8 million went to Polk County alone, which means that the other counties, there was a smaller portion. But it so happened that we were able to award those dollars based on the requests that came in. But there were needs that other counties had that they chose not to actually apply because they just felt it was really a gray area. And as we found out that sometimes if you don't use those dollars, then you've got to return it back to the state. And so there's a challenge that counties face however they go through this. And I'm optimistic that they will work with us. But I do think that it's very difficult, and I know I talked to supervisors in Linn County, and they have the same feeling that we have, to actually go ahead and make a commitment that you're going to receive those dollars at this point in time is not a wise decision to make. So however we go through this process, Rick, I'm certainly acknowledge your concern and think that we need to be as careful as we can be.
Well, absolutely. Deb, where do we need to get to today?
Well, and I want to go back quickly first to Wayne, the question that came up about as far as the county reimbursing the other funders who are stepping in and assisting. I don't think there's anything that precludes us from doing that. It would be a matter of talking to those funders, maybe having some sort of a written agreement, you know, once we were more certain on where things were going to land. And at the asset joint funders meeting a couple of weeks ago, we did talk quite a bit about the upcoming fiscal year and the challenges the county was facing with the mental health services and the funding. So they are aware of that, and I think we just need to keep those discussions going. Mm-hmm. Rick, your question, we're at the point today with the fiscal year starting next week of making a decision on where we need to go with these cuts so that we can revise our budget for fiscal year 13. And then if we do get the transition funds, then we can go back in and make another revision.
Yeah, and my belief, Deb, is we are where we are. I mean, we've got to make these cuts until we know that there are going to be transition funds coming. That said, I would ask, and maybe this has already been done and I'm just missing it, I would ask that we sit down one more time with the other asset funders and with these service providers and just lay it out that really what we're looking at is the first 6 months of the year, a plan to get through the first 6 months of the year, knowing that the county is not going to participate at all because we can't in these areas, and then two plans for the second 6 months, one if there's sufficient transition funds available and one if there's not. I mean, it's a bad way to do business, but I can't think of another way for us to operate at this point.
So, Deb, the list that's included in the packet today with the waiting list information, this is the items that we have listed, if approved, would be subjected to the waiting list if there are sufficient numbers that require service. Would these be new individuals requesting service or existing members that are currently being served that would be jeopardized?
The services included on the waiting list would be anybody who is new.
Okay. And I think that's an important distinction to note, that individuals already on would not be impacted, right?
We're not, you know, for example, and I know this is going on in other counties, where they're paying, for example, for residential care facilities costs for folks. They're moving people out of those facilities left and right and looking for alternative placement and you know, depending on what's available and what the person needs. We are not doing that. We are looking at the situations, and if that's appropriate, then we'll sit down with the team working with that individual and and decide whether the move is appropriate. But we're just not automatically saying we're moving everybody out of a residential care facility, because we don't know what the alternatives would be for some of these individuals, and we certainly don't want to risk health and safety and put them in a homeless situation. So we've you know, put together with our numbers the continuation of funding for those services for people who are currently in the system. Mm-hmm. But anybody new would go on a waiting list, and we would be tracking that.
So do we need action today? These were things you presented to us,
right?
Mm-hmm. Previously, and right. And so what is the action we're looking for?
Go ahead. It's the documents, I believe, this year that is listed here is the opportunity to actually approve accepting the services that would be going on the waiting list as included here.
Yeah, there are two items. There's the one with the cuts, and then there's...
The waiting list is a separate.
The waiting list is separate,
yep,
yeah.
Yep, that'd be next.
I would assume if we make a motion to follow through with the identified cuts that Deb's talked about here today in the amounts. I'll make that motion.
Okay, would you restate it so that Stacy has it?
I would move that the county move forward with the identified cuts to ARC Legal Aid and the Wellness Center in the amounts that have been discussed.
Second.
It's been moved and second that the county move forward with the identified cuts that have been submitted and discussed. Is there further discussion?
I'd just like it noted that I believe, I know it's my intention, I believe it's our intention that we reinstate that funding as soon as funds are available, and that comes down to if the transition funds actually exist and are distributed.
Great. Thank you for the addition. So with that, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Thank you, Deb. Okay. Now, do we need any action as far as those waiting lists, okay, yep, that are submitted here?
Yep, there okay. are. Whenever a county is implementing a waiting list for disability services, there's a declaration that has to be made and approved by the Board of Supervisors. So that's the short form that's in front of you. And along with that is our waiting list information. And if you don't mind, I would like to read both documents for the record. And if we have any questions that we need to address, we can do that. The waiting list declaration states, I declare under penalty of perjury that the dollars available in Story County for Disability Services Fund 10 have been fully encumbered for fiscal year 2013, and that I instituted a waiting list as of July 1st, 2012, as described in policies and procedures for the designated services funded by Story County. That's the declaration. The waiting list information, the following services will be exempt from the waiting list, so not applied. Outpatient evaluation, outpatient medication management, individual and group therapy, nursing and crisis services, involuntary hospitalization and related court commitment costs, those are mandates, and respite that is facility-based. So those services will not apply to the waiting list. Services that will apply to the waiting list include adult daycare, adult day services, enclave, residential care facility, residential care facility for the mentally retarded. There are two different licensures there. Supervised apartment living, supported community living, supported employment, and transportation for purposes other than medical, mental health, or benefit appointments, and then work activity and sheltered work.
And no pun intended, but Lisa, we have kept you up to date regarding where we are with the funding and things of that nature, and as our fiscal agent, I look at this statement and I notice, Deb, that you and I are the only two signatures on here, and the statement is under the penalty of perjury. So I'm assuming that we truly are going to encumber those dollars for the amount laid out. So I just wanted to make sure Lisa was comfortable with that.
Well, and the other thing with the waiting list, according to our policies and procedures, I mean, we'll be reviewing our budget on a monthly basis, and then on a quarterly basis, we'll be notifying clients on that waiting list as far as where things stand, if they're going to continue being on it or if they're close to being at the top and that we can begin providing services for them. So there'll be that ongoing communication with the client.
Okay.
So when somebody under one of these services that we are instituted a waiting list for, when they come see you Monday, are they on a waiting list then for a quarter? And then we see where we are after that quarter. I mean, just walk me through the realities of what this means.
Right. If we get a referral and somebody who's interested in hourly supported community living services and they're new to our system, they will go on the waiting list. And what I will tell them is they will be notified on a quarterly basis as to where they are in that waiting list and if dollars become available, because we'll be talking to them about, you know, how many hours of service, so we have a projected cost. And if that need changes at the time that their name does come up on the waiting list, we'll have to address that. But on at least a quarterly basis, they will be contacted and informed as far as where they are in the list and how much longer it may be.
And this does not apply to anybody in our system before July 1st of 12.
Correct. And in fact, there could be situations where people might be in a higher level of care right now in our system and they move into a less costly level of care. That frees up some dollars, you know, that we can then move people around within. So, but we're looking at new people coming into the system, with the exception of anybody needing the outpatient mental health services or involuntary hospitalization.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I would entertain a motion concerning the waiting list.
I'll make a motion approving the waiting list, including the services that were outlined here today by Deb.
Second.
Then moved and second the approval of the waiting list for mental health disability service as outlined. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. And now we move on down to item number 4, is a consideration of request for additional funds for Heartland Senior Service for FY 11-12 of $24,605.18 for nutritional services. Deb?
Right. The nutrition program through Heartland Senior Services includes home-delivered meals and congregate meals. And the asset administrative team has had several meetings with Liz Beck and her board and staff about where they were projecting things to end by fiscal year 12. Liz, as you know, had stepped in initially as an interim director, and it's become a more permanent kind of thing for the time being. And she started, after she submitted her budget to asset for fiscal year 13, her and her financial department sat down and really started trying to dig through what services truly cost at Heartland Senior Services. In prior years, the procedure had been just to keep adding a cost of living increase on top of what the services were costing, and that just wasn't that was raising red flags for Liz as she was looking at the entire budget. And so what they did is they particularly took a look at transportation and nutrition and had individual audits of those programs done after she had turned in the fiscal year 12 budget. And when Heartland had their hearing with Asset in January, She gave us some preliminary information as to what things were looking like based on what those audited figures for those programs were coming up with. And initially, she thought they would be in about a $90,000 deficit, and now that's been scaled back to $36,052 for fiscal year 12. And that's just for the nutrition program for fiscal year 12. And I think, you know, at the time, Asset kept asking, you know, let's wait and see as Heartland moved away from providing the transportation services and start taking a look at what their budget would look like after the transportation program was transitioned to another agency. That's when we got the figures that you have before you from June 12, and then what they're asking is of the city, the county, and United Way. So I do give Heartland a lot of credit for taking a hard look at their programs and trying to stabilize the financial footings of Heartland and making some tough decisions in terms of what services need to stay, what services need to go. And so before us is the request for congregate meals. The request from the county is $3,511.66, and the request for the county for their home-delivered meals is $21,093.52. There is one congregate site that closed this past year, and that was in Maxwell, and they are anticipating closing the McCallsburg and Ziering sites this coming year. There just are few people showing up, and those individuals who would go to a congregate site could either get home-delivered meals or go to an alternative site if needed. Are there any questions or comments?
So, Deb, help me understand now the additional allocation of dollars. One of the things is you look at what dollars had been drawn down for the various services throughout the whole asset funding stream, and if there are additional dollars, normally those dollars are just carried over unless they've been so designated by the board for specifically for a particular type of program. So we're not really talking about new dollars needing to be generated from someplace, but it's kind of like what we had to do for MICA when you're shifting dollars from one line item to another to where they have identified a specific need. And while this is not the way that we have operated in the past, and it's not the way I would prefer that we do at the end of each fiscal year, Heartland, in their own due diligence, brought this to our attention and to the funder's attention several months ago and have made a concentrated effort to really look at cost-effective ways to provide the service and to move forward. And you may recall that as of July 1 now, the transportation part will be taken over by Herder regional office and so forth, and the transfer of the drivers, all but two of the drivers have been retained, and they have a new facility for storing the buses on East Lincoln Way. I was by there yesterday and saw that the construction and layout of the dispatch office and everything should be raring to go. So I think that from my perspective, that if there is a way for us to assist in this manner, as even though it's not the norm that we've operated, I believe we need to look at each situation on a case-by-case basis. And in this case, I think there is a clear demonstrated need that by shifting those dollars into the nutritional area, they would be able to provide the ongoing support in this area. So I guess I normally would not feel if this was a last-minute type of situation, and I feel there was maybe some, I hate to use the word mismanagement, but that they could have done some other things to have made a difference. I really don't see that in this case. I think they have really put forth a real good effort, and I guess I'm somewhat asking for the board to weigh in and be supportive of this request That's from my own personal point of view, and so you certainly are willing to weigh in your own thoughts regarding that.
Within the county's total allocation of general fund dollars for all services and asset for fiscal year 12, there was a total of $17,595 not drawn down by
a variety of... Again,
$17,595.
Okay.
And that's a variety of services over a variety of providers. Now, $943 of that was money not drawn down by Heartland for their friendly visitor program. So there are some dollars remaining within the general fund allocation from the county for asset services. And you are correct, Wayne. We have in some of the previous years taken that allocation and applied it then to the following fiscal year's allocation. But that's kind of on a year-to-year basis that we take a look at that. Heartland's total request of the county is $24,605.18. And how they've been drawing down the money from the county over the fiscal year has been just 1/12 of the allocation. And while the county prefers that the amount is drawn down based on units of service provided, when I talked to the financial director at Heartland, she said she drew it down in 1/12 allocation just to assure cash flow for Heartland on a month-to-month basis. So in both their congregate meals and their home-delivered meal programs, they did exhaust the entire allocation for each service.
So the difference between the $17,595 and the $943, it wasn't drawn down. There is some additional dollars there, but we have the capacity basically to fund this request as you see, if we were so approve it.
Yeah, if you back out that $943, that leaves a total of $16,652 in the general fund. One of the ways that I looked at it, since Heartland was drawing down a 1/12 of the allocation throughout the year, if we were to apply that same principle to their request, the additional to the congregate meals would be $8,795, which is above their special request. And then for the home-delivered meals, it was $7,632, for a total of $11,144, or 45% of their request.
Help me understand, Deb. Currently, we fund our portion of the nutrition program through ASSET. So this is a program that we funded based on the request that Heartland made going into the year. And at the end of the year, or several months ago, they found out it wasn't going so well for them. So now they're asking us to backfill to make them whole. How would something like this have been viewed if they had made the additional request at the beginning of the asset process for FY12? If they had said, no, our costs are much greater, because I'm assuming that's what this is. At the end of the day, costs are much greater than they projected. If they had made that request, how would that have been viewed by our asset team?
If they had been able to have this information from those individual audits at the time that they turned their budget in September, October, at the hearing, we would have asked, you know, why are you asking for so much more money? And they could have said then, you know, our costs are more. We went through this audit process, justified it that way. They probably would have been provided additional dollars at the very beginning. But we're talking about they turned in their fiscal year 12 budget in September, October of 2011, and they didn't do the individual audit piece until the fall of 2012. So when Liz stepped into that management role, she just kind of took the information that was available to her at that time and applied it to the budget, and then started peeling away the onion, if you will, and said, you know, this isn't looking right. We need to have a better or a closer look at these programs individually instead of the entire. And we talked about this at the asset administrative team meeting too, you know, as far as what kind of a precedent are we setting by having an agency come in at the very end of the fiscal year and asking for these dollars. That is certainly something to weigh in on the consideration. The flip side to that is this isn't something that broadsided us in terms of we just found out in June. We have had those ongoing conversations with Liz and her board since last fall when they started looking at this a little bit closer. I do think they are trying to make an effort in cleaning things up. If they don't get the request in full or just even partial, they have a contingency plan in mind. And a couple of things that they're looking at is reducing the hours that the administration office is open, not the adult day service or the adult daycare, but just the administration office, as well as further reductions in staff.
Take me through how you got to 11,000. Again.
Okay. I looked at how they drew down the money this fiscal year, and they drew it down
112.
By 12th. Yeah,
okay.
Just for their cash flow purposes. And I did reiterate that we do like to see the units of service.
Have we seen the units of service?
They do provide that as backup, yes, as backup documentation. And on average, they provide 1,974 meals in the congregate sites per month. And that's all throughout the county, all their sites. And then they also provide about 1,500 meals per month through their home-delivered meals program. So how I arrived at the 11,144 is I just took an additional 12th of what they drew down. So, for example, in congregate meals, they drew down each month about $733. So
okay.
I just took that times 12. And then the home-delivered meals, they drew down $636 a month, and that totals out to $7,632. Now, since that $8,795 for congregate meals is above and beyond their request, if we just met their congregate request of $3,511 plus the home delivered of $7,632, that's the $11,144. Because I don't know that you want to go above their
well,
request.
Well, I kind of want to keep us be mindful of the same scenario with Micah. We did not fund the total amount. We did reduce that to within a reasonable look at how we would apply that. So that's not to say that we have to apply the same scenario here, but I do think that since it is clearly above the actual amount for that portion, that may be something that we ought to factor in whatever the dollar amount that we award, just as a thought.
Yeah, well, Wayne, I think you're right. I mean, first of all, based on what Deb's telling us, I don't see a way we could fund the entire request that they're making because we don't have those general fund dollars available. Secondly, the $943 that Heartland has not drawn down, I think that is an apples-to-apples comparison of what we did
right.
with Micah.
Right.
My issue is in the other $16,500 that is unused asset dollars that were designated for other service providers, now drawing those down. In this case, I'm having trouble finding justification in my mind to get there while I recognize the need. And so I'm trying, just for me, Wayne, I'm trying to have Deb convince me that there's a way to justify that $11,000 number that you came to, and I haven't quite gotten there yet for me. And so that's where I am. The first $1,000, that $943 that Heartland did not draw down, even though it was in a different area, I'm good with that one. It's figuring out the rest of it. So maybe you guys can help me with that.
Well, could you, I guess, I probably heard you say where the discomfort is. Is it because of just the fact that we do not have the additional funds above in the general fund, and we want to just tie that to the request of the allocated dollars that generally are contained there? What I'm trying to help understand is, and yet I can understand your hesitancy a little bit here in trying to understand and wrap your arms around this complicated issue, but what appears to be the key issue here that's probably that's impacting you more than anything else in coming to a resolution here?
Yeah, my problem, Wayne, is that we put a lot of faith and trust in our asset process. I mean, I know personally, I think our asset process here in Story County is one of the great ones, and something that other areas ought to model. That said, if you believe, like me, that our asset process, as it's currently structured, is a great service to all of the county, then when we have to come in with these 11th-hour kind of decisions, which circumvents the asset process, I'm struggling. I was able to do it with MICA. I want to say it was about $4,000 that we did with MICA. I was able to get there with MICA because it was funding that Asset had approved for MICA, albeit for a different program within MICA. It was funding that had been approved there, and MICA was able to sit here before us and explain to us exactly why they weren't able to utilize it in one area and why they need it for another, and it made sense, and I was able to get it done. This one to me looks more like Asset did the best they could with the information that was provided to them by Heartland. Heartland has learned new information in the meantime, which shows that financially things they're in some discomfort financially, and I'm struggling with how that becomes appropriate for us to sit here at the end of June and make a decision that in essence circumvents the whole asset process. I mean, if we're going to be the funders of all these things, then we should be the funders of all these things, and I don't want to get there. I want our asset process to remain as it is and continue to be strong. That said, Wayne, I completely recognize that this is a unique scenario, and I believe that the three of us are appropriate to consider something like this. I'm just having trouble justifying it in my mind.
Well, I appreciate that, and I guess the question would fall back if we, and we certainly do value the asset process. Is there a provision, Deb, that the asset group would be able to reconvene and to take a look at the dollars that is remaining and then bring forth a recommendation as to whether we continue as we have with the dollars been allocated or not? I know I'm just using the past scenario. Even if we delayed this until into the next fiscal year, the chances are, depending upon what decisions are made, some dollars could be allocated rather than having to wait till the new fiscal year start with the asset process. We've not done this, to my knowledge, in the past. If there was to be a change, this would have already gone through the asset process. And because we haven't had this, I'm wondering, is there a reason for us to, you know, see if that's a possibility?
Well, keep in mind, asset is a funder-driven process.
Right.
So it is within the board's right as a funder to make that request to convene the panel that the nutrition program is on. I believe it's panel two, to get back together and make that decision. So you know, I mean, because requests have also been made of United Way in the city of Ames. United Way board has not voted on this yet, and I believe the city council is looking at it tonight. And they want to know what comes out of the meeting this morning. But that is within the purview of a funder, that if you want that panel to go to pull back together and take a look at this request, we can certainly do that.
I think that might be
most appropriate here. I mean, I like you, I think we're running the risk of setting a dangerous precedent at this point in the game.
Well, a dangerous precedent, and while the three of us stay informed and involved in what's going on in asset, we don't get nearly as deep into this as our different funding groups do looking at this. And so when a request like this comes, I mean, ultimately we're the decision maker. No question about that. Deb hits the nail on the head. But if we're going to go down this road of doing this, it seems to me we're opening a huge doorway for these kind of requests, and we better have a good, solid process for how we make a determination. Now, that said, I'd like us to go ahead and release the $943 that asset had allocated by asset for a different area and not used. But the rest of it, for me to support it, I'm going to need to learn some more from our asset funders. And so I would ask that, you said it was group two?
Panel two.
Panel two. I'd ask that we get panel two back together to take a look at this request and make a recommendation.
Put that in the form of a motion, please.
Sure. I move that $943 remaining in asset allocation to Heartland be released for Heartland to use for nutrition services, and I further ask that panel two be reconvened to take a look at this request from Heartland and make a recommendation to the board.
Second that.
It's been moved and second that we release the $943 and to ask that the asset panel two be reconvened to look at this request and bring forth a recommendation. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Rick, thank you. Appreciate the thought process, and Paul as well. I think that, this is one of those areas that the more information we receive and the manner in which we make these determinations, I think, is extremely important as we move forward. So I appreciate your position on this, both of you. Thank you.
Thank you. And I also appreciate the fact of preserving and the integrity of the asset process and keeping that as the vehicle to help make these decisions. So I will be talking to staff of the other funders, and we'll look at reconvening panel two.
Are we ready now to go back to number one?
No.
No.
I have to.
Great.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay.
She does work in the Des Moines area, so I don't know if something came up and she
will just refer this to later. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Great.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you so much. All right. And with that, now Lucy Martin, moving on to discuss the purchase of a laptop and data, it says laptops and Dynamo printer to implement Precinct Atlas. Auditor Lucy Martin, okay?
Yeah. Deb didn't have enough presentations today, so I asked her to stay for mine. And that's because she is a precinct chair at Ames 3-2, which is one of our busier precincts. And she also learned firsthand what it's like to work with Precinct Atlas for the primary election. So I asked her, since she actually was in the trenches using it. I'm here today to talk about I'm planning on purchasing laptops and Dynamo printers to fully implement Precinct Atlas in Story County. I had come before you maybe 6 weeks ago or earlier to discuss that. Ken Klein had presented. This is a priority for my office, and I fully intend to try to make these purchases within the budget that I have right now. Of course, a general election, even though we've gone through several, and I think we did a good job of budgeting based on what we can anticipate, it is possible I will have to come back before you later this year to ask for additional funds for the general election. I anticipate that to fully implement Precinct Atlas in Story County will cost us an additional $32,000. I expect to see significant savings in extra help from this, especially in the post-election period, where we typically need an additional 3 weeks to process the election. I can effectively eliminate almost all of that with Precinct Atlas. So I'm also taking advantage of a group purchase with other counties to obtain the additional laptops and the Dymo printers, which are required. We did use it in two precincts for the primary election. Primary had very low turnout. We had 2.4%. But I got unanimous yes votes on the use of Precinct Atlas from our election officials. I think they're all pleased with the outcome, especially with redistricting. We have a lot of people that have been reassigned, especially in Ames, where we had the most changes due to redistricting and reprecincting. And I think that for that alone, to have a printed label that tells people which precinct they belong to and where they need to go, is going to be very helpful. We have publication requirements with redistricting. We will be publishing those changes for three successive weeks in September. We also, in February, mailed every registered voter a card listing their new precinct and polling location. You know, people don't always pay attention to those changes, and it might not be until November 6th where they realize that, oh, I'm in a new precinct. Even though I haven't moved, my precinct has been redrawn. So I don't know, Deb, if you had any comments about the use of the Atlas.
Yeah, it's a pretty slick system, and in the precinct that I worked in, we had a total of 25 people come through. And eight actually could vote there, but the others who could not, we just entered their information in, and then, as Lucy said, the label printed out, and we handed it to them. A lot of people we had to redirect to Actors, and or Oakwood Road Church, but they walked out. They were fine. They knew where to go, and we reminded them of the hours. I think the hours might even be on that label. So there wasn't quite as much contention back and forth in terms of why can't I vote here, that kind of thing. And ultimately, we could have them vote there, but this way their vote was likely more to count. So it was a really slick system. We had people that we could the term is escaping my mind. Register to vote right there.
Election day registration.
Thank you. EDR. Instead of having a separate table of people to go to and a separate another staff person to man that table, we can do that all on that laptop right there. And it's very quick. It leads you through. It has prompts. So I was excited that we were one of the precincts that got to try it out, and think that it's more efficient. And like Lucy said, although I don't see what happens after the election and the processes that have to be followed after that, it is my understanding it's going to take care of a lot of the staffing issues that are required for that. So
plus you didn't have to alphabetize eligibility slips.
Yes, that was very helpful. Cut down on the time, and yeah. So I'm in the precinct that I work in. It's primarily students, even more so now with the redistricting. And I fully anticipate come November, a lot of those people are going to have to register to vote. And so we'll be doing a lot of that process that particular day, but hopefully get them through quickly if we have that system. So I appreciate the opportunity of being able to use that and looking at.
Lucy, my question is, are this purchase, some of these dollars coming out of this FY, or is all of this coming out of next FY when you say that we will
The funding FY to 13, do that? Sorry.
But all of it will be coming out of FY 13. Okay.
No scanners?
Scanners significantly boost the cost there. I didn't feel I could fold that into this budget. It's also the counties that have implemented those, they have already used the Precinct Atlas. It seemed like one more new thing to throw at the precinct election officials, which might actually scare them off as opposed to making their jobs easier. It was an additional $20,000 to buy scanners.
And remind me of our relationship with Precinct Atlas at this point.
We have a signed MOU, and it's a year-to-year basis that we pay that. So
if something,
and if we don't use it, then I think we get our money back as well.
What do we pay?
About a little under $3,000.
Just under $3,000.
The per voter cost.
But there is a way, if there's something else that comes along, if the Secretary of State ends up with something that Story County would like to use in future elections, it's just a year-to-year agreement.
Yeah, I would anticipate that would be a software change, and we would need something like the laptops and the Dynamo printers anyway.
That was going to be my next question. Is this something?
And I don't see how you. Yeah, it would be. That's the only thing I could see changing if it goes to some statewide system. That we would get different software.
But how many counties are already using this? I mean, it seems to me that anybody who comes
50,
in is going to need to recognize that.
And it's. I really like the idea of every voter in Story County having the same process, regardless of who's working the table that day. Mm-hmm. It adds a consistency. I think it's also very helpful for our precinct election officials who work very hard on a very long day, and it takes, they're not put on the spot so much. As Deb said, it walks you through a variety of scenarios that happen at the polls, and everybody gets a consistent response.
Well, I'm a fan of the scanners, but I understand it's $20,000.
It's an easy add-on, as are the air cards, if we want to be giving up-to-date information about to the parties, and that would alleviate, I think, some of the poll watching. That they wouldn't have to staff polls. They would just get an electronic list instead.
No plans to do that for this election?
No, that's also a cost. I am interested. You had a presentation a while back about bringing more wireless opportunities to the county. We would need to see that. There are certainly areas where we have precincts where we don't have capacity to even do that. Even with the proper technology, there's just not the access to 3G or internet or Wi-Fi or anything from those locations. So if we wire the county, yes.
One step.
I would love to see that. Those are two very attractive add-ons that could come later once we are up to speed.
You can get these and get them up and running, everybody. Ready to go in November.
Yeah, because we're going to get the purchase done in July and then get them loaded, and then we will have to have additional training for election officials. I think that worked out well. We'll be tapping into the precinct officials that work the primary to train the train. You know, they'll be our help us train as well.
Don't you have some election laptops at this point?
Yes, actually, we have 31, so we that really helps us in terms of the purchase.
So we'll be able to use those.
Absolutely, I do have to sit down with the new IT director to talk about upgrading the operating system on those. Okay. I have a long laundry list for her. Actually, I'm sure everybody does.
The first day, go easy on her. We want her to come back tomorrow.
And this doesn't require any action by us. I mean, this is just
This is just an FYI. Yeah. I wanted to be very upfront. A general election is very expensive for the county in any case. It would probably be a wash here in terms of the savings, but long term, I think it's going to more than pay for itself.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And then I just, because I had your attention, I put myself on the agenda one more time. And it's about the schedule for the canvas, which we have already scheduled. There are administrative rules that will be adopted later this summer. I just wanted to let you know, because of the way the Veterans Day holiday falls in terms of the canvas, usually you have the canvas the Tuesday after the election. You're already here for a board day. This canvas will be on the Wednesday, the 14th. It's scheduled for 3 o'clock. I anticipate that you will be here till 5 o'clock. You remember the signing for the primary stacks about this high. Stack for the generals is higher because we have several more races. But because of the holiday, we will be examining absentee ballots until noon on Tuesday the 13th. And if we get any with that are properly postmarked and timely, then we will have to reconvene the absentee board. And so we won't be able to prepare the canvas materials finally until that morning of Wednesday. So I just wanted you to be aware of that and to get that on your calendars now. And since I was here, I just took the opportunity to
put myself on the agenda. You go out and buy a grip exerciser to get ready for the signatures.
Bring your blue pen. Make sure it's full of ink. actually, after the canvas, the auditor will also be sworn in. So just like when Paul was sworn in last round, because it was to fill a vacancy. So.
Okay. While we've got you there, there's a consent agenda item, consideration for renewal of a support agreement with Solutions. I just wanted to ask you about that one before you
went. That's for our financial software.
Right.
That's a standard.
That's just what we do. I didn't know with a new IT director starting today if that was something.
I think usually we get that sooner in the fiscal year. It just came very late this year. So it's appearing kind of at the tail end of the year.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. Appreciate the information, and we'll get that on our calendar. Moving on to item 6 is the consideration of personnel actions. They are listed for you on the agenda. Are there any questions or comments regarding personnel action?
I'll move approval of the personnel list.
Second.
Been moved and seconded the approval of the personnel actions. Hearing no further comment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Personnel actions are approved. Okay. Next is the consent agenda. On the consent agenda, please add under utility permits, which is 26. Add utility permit 1252 and 1253. 1252 and 1253. And then, Board, I would like to request that we pull item 4 on the consent agenda for discussion, which is the acknowledgement of the receipt of the new manure management plan for Richland Fisher Farms. Okay. Are there any other questions about the consent agenda at this time?
Move the consent agenda with noted changes.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of the consent agenda with noted changes. And now I would just like to have a 2-minute recess before we come back to the discussion of the new manure management plan. Thank you.
One a.m. I got done last night. I left for the airport at 5 a.m. Got on the plane at just after 7. I hate those things. I mean, you know how I am in meetings anyway. Can you?
Okay. Okay, at this time, we're ready to reconvene after a short recess. And on the consent agenda, under item number 4, we have a request to acknowledge receipt of a new manure management plan for the Richland Finisher Farm, which will
Wayne,
be...
Can I interrupt for just a second? Lucy, did we vote on the consent agenda? There's a question.
Oh, you know, we did not. We did not. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Good catch.
Okay. Good job. Yes. Going back to the consent. Yeah. We added the utility commits. And
I made a motion on the consent agenda.
Yes,
with noted
and we had a second.
Seconded.
Right. We had a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. So, roll call. Sanders.
Aye.
Toot.
Aye.
Clinton. Aye. Consent agenda is adopted. And now we come back to the item that was pulled for discussion. Thank you for the correction. Okay. Again, as I said, we had this request. If you remember a couple weeks ago, we had a similar request brought to our attention that fell below the master matrix threshold. And pull that for our discussion. I have received several emails from interested citizens regarding the confinement issue. And I wanted to make sure that I also entered those into the record at a later time in the discussion. But we also have a request here from Evan Berger, and I don't know, Evan, if this is pertaining particularly to this one or just talk confinement in general. Is that correct?
I'll speak about
this. Okay, great. Thank you.
Well, Margaret's got just a short presentation.
No, okay. Okay. Oh, we can go ahead.
All
yeah.
right. I'll be quick.
Yeah. I really didn't have much to ask on this one, but I certainly had it here for if it was something we needed for clarification.
All right.
Go ahead.
Okay. As Mr. Clinton mentioned, you know, this is very similar to the application we were talking about a couple weeks ago. And, you know, there I think you guys were really receptive to a lot of the water quality concerns, a lot of other concerns a lot of people had concerning that location. I just wanted to point out as we're talking about this Richland site, you know, Iowa has some of the dirtiest water in the country. And that's not just because of sites that are near parks, you know, where the fields abut the park or near lakes, near bodies of water, but you know, it's the combined result of thousands of these sites all across the state. You know, we all know how water works. It all has to run somewhere. And, you know, as this manure is being applied to the fields, accidents happen. You know, there have been over 800 accidental spills in Iowa in the past 15 years. And I think it's no coincidence that Iowa does have some of the dirtiest water in the nation. So even though this site isn't next to a large park in the county, I do think it still has I have a lot of the same concerns about water quality with this site as well. And I just wanted to voice those concerns and also ask you to, you know, do what you can. I know you have no formal say in this process of approving this site, but I would ask you to do what you can. I have a couple quick suggestions. I know we're going to talk about a resolution next week similar to the one the Conservation Board passed. You know, there are also other things that other counties have done in the past, such as passing a resolution asking for local control. Mr. Clinton, you said that a lot of counties don't actually want that sort of power, but if the Story County Board of Supervisors passed some sort of resolution asking the legislature for local control, I think that'd send a message to the legislators. Also, it's my understanding that the neighbors are not notified when you receive one of these plans. Is that correct?
Until we have a public hearing process, mm-hmm. That would be the only official notification that I think would take place at that point. But since this falls below that, then they would have to pay attention to the normal board agenda and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. I know that some counties have passed, they've adopted the process of sending out a letter to the households within a mile of sites, even under the threshold, just so they know that, you know, this is going in, that you have received a manure management plan. So that's another sort of resolution that I would like to see on the agenda some point in the future. And I think a lot of other citizens of Story County would as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this particular issue? Okay. Margaret, do you have any additional information? The chair, I don't think you necessarily need to go through the full PowerPoint unless someone wanted to see some of the uniqueness that's about this one.
The only thing I wanted to mention on that is a mile is arbitrary, and we have notified the ones that we went through Master Matrix, and we did pick a mile. Sometimes we run into a situation where it's fairly close to a town, and that would blow my budget. So we would have to maybe do a different method of notification, but just as a FYI to the landowners, we do that. So if we do pass a resolution, we would want to put something in there where, you know, the best way to notify people, something like that, as opposed to by mail.
So the request for this particular one, actually, was it less than the previous one that we had discussed? or very similar.
Very similar.
$24.90.
Yeah, $24.90, and for the year, just under 5,000 head. Mm-hmm. About 6 miles north of Nevada, about 4 miles northwest of Fernald. And this is just kind of a schematic where the manure is going to be placed. And as far as water quality, it is, let's see, you know, yes, close to some of the tiles, drain tiles.
Is that what the green lines are, is drain tiles?
Yep. Those are the known county drain tiles, not the private. We don't know where the private ones are. And then just going back to this, it shows, let's see, not any major waterways close by. But the tile drains would be of concern for water quality. That's all I have.
Okay. Any other questions for Margaret?
Yeah, Margaret, I was thinking about this. The last few days as I'm sitting on airplanes. And so if they were at 2,500 head or more, it would trigger the master matrix. Is there some kind of rule that says that we as a county can't look at the master matrix, understanding that we don't have any say? Is there some kind of rationale as to why we don't just go ahead and look at the master matrix the same for everybody?
Well, that would involve them having to fill out that application, which involves them hiring a consultant because they get to pick the questions that they want to address.
But then you decide whether you agree or not with the
based
points
on the
they
ones
award.
That they choose.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by code, if it reaches that threshold, it's automatic that they have to go through that application process.
Yes.
And since we had at the board adopted the resolution to review the master matrix, that allows us to then engage in the review from the county's position to look at the information that they present and then to forward a recommendation as well as solicit comments from all the affected residents. So, but it's done through the public hearing format. We chose a couple weeks ago because of the proximity of this area and the volatility and sensitivity as connected to it, that it puts the county in a very difficult position when we receive these and they fall below the threshold, but yet there is no real opportunity for the public to be aware of them and for us and others to work with potential landowners regarding trying to mitigate the overall impact, the negative impact that many people associate with these large confinements. And so I think that puts us in a position where even though the law only requires to the threshold there, we can establish local policy and procedure that when we receive these requests, we could acknowledge them or we could have an opportunity for the public to discuss that matter before consideration. Now, one thought to think about, if you recall, we took no action on acknowledging the receipt in the previous case, in order to allow the public a more opportunity to comment. I think a lot of that had a lot to do with also the proximity of that one to water sources and so forth, but that is still an option that we would not have to actually take any action at this time. This could be deferred to a later time. And as you recall, last week, we did indicate that the board would bring forth a discussion of the resolution that was adopted by the conservation at a later date. And so looking at this agenda and everything, I thought it would probably be better to schedule that for next week's agenda. But I would want us to be discussing what efforts at all would we want to take as a county regarding either acknowledging or supporting the conservations, or do we want to come up with a statement of our own? But I felt that that would give the public due notification that we plan to address that, and if anyone wanted to come and be present, it would give them due notification. So what we do here, obviously we could go ahead and acknowledge that, or we could defer action. I just want to look at trying to establish some level of consistency as to how we operate.
Well, and I think you bring up a great point, and I can only speak for me. I mean, as I recall the last one, Paul made a motion that we acknowledge receipt, and neither one of us seconded, and so it died for lack of a second. And I'll just speak for me. The reason I didn't second it is I wasn't clear on how much of the property that they were talking about spreading the manure drained directly to Hickory Grove. We didn't know how much of it was in the drainage area. There were questions I had specifically related to Hickory Grove that I wanted answered prior to taking any action on it. This one, while I completely appreciate the fact that we have tiles running through a lot of the county, this one does not appear to me, at least for me, to have that same concern as it relates to one of our parks, one of our major waterways. And so I do view this one differently than I viewed the last one. Now, that said, we can take whatever action you guys want to take, but that's where I was coming from the last time. And I do think it's important, Wayne, that we have consistent rationale for why we do what we do. So that's my intention in explaining where I was on the last one.
Margaret, how big of an operation before you have to file a manure management plan? I mean, if I'm going to put up a building and put 200 hogs in it, do I have to? I mean, is there a threshold that triggers a master matrix? Is there a threshold that triggers a manure management plan?
Flow sheet. I think it depends too on how you plan to store that manure. If it's going to be a lagoon type thing, you'd have to involve the DNR right away on something like that. Is it 1250 that you have to? And then there's all different levels. And then if it's an addition, it depends on when the original one was installed. So there, it's just a whole. It's hard to answer that question.
Okay. If at some point Mr. Jensen wants to come back and add another building this size on the same property,
that would bump him up into the master matrix review.
But it has to be the same landowner. Is that correct? I mean, if
or the owner of that company.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just for information purposes, Evan, Mr. Berger, Paul and I attended the District 1 supervisors meeting last week, and this topic was discussed. Unfortunately, only 8 supervisors were in attendance of District 1, but it was one of the more lengthy discussions of everything that we did after it was all said and done. There is a sentiment among some supervisors that we would hope that the legislature would begin to look at the rules and guidelines that are currently there and perhaps change the scoring process where more factors could be considered. And as we all know, if you apply this to coal-fired facilities today, when you upgrade, there's the new technology, there are stricter standards that are implied. And the discussion centered around air quality controls and would like to see the legislature require that some type of air quality factors would be built in to mitigate the smell. Now, currently the laws does not do that, but I'm told that the industry does have that capacity. So I believe that the Iowa Association of County Supervisors will at least be addressing this topic in the upcoming session. Whether or not it will become a full topic at our fall school is yet to be determined. I plan to bring it up for discussion, but I've been kind of told that this may be a can of worms that we don't want to open at this point in time. But I do think there are enough county supervisors out there that are very much concerned, mainly because of the local concerns that are being raised. But we also, and for me personally, this is a really a difficult, well, I shouldn't say, there is a role and understanding of local producers, and they have certain rights within the law as well. And in order to make a profit and to be profitable in their business endeavor, how do we factor in their rights concerned with the concerns for local, for citizens as well? And so that's a balancing act in itself. And so to come down where we're saying that we're going to ban all forms of confinements is a real difficult one from a personal point of view, because being a minority myself, I look on these individuals as a minority in a institution whereby they are trying to maintain a livelihood. But at the same time, I want, as a county, to have some control, some ability to monitor what is being done, and if it's not being done properly, that there could be some fines that would be associated with it. And without the locals being in a position to help monitor that, then I think we really are opening ourselves up for an influx of developments within a county that I think I would be derelict in my responsibility to not really take a firm stand as well. But so it is it's not as simple as just saying that they don't have, that we should just deny them the opportunity to expand. I really wrestle with that. And I know I've received some emails from people, and they just flatly say, you know, that this type of operation should just be abolished, and no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And I really struggle with that.
That's the majority of the emails. I don't know that I get. I don't know about you two guys. I'm assuming we're all getting them, but the majority of the emails that I receive are not in favor of this type of operation. Period. Anywhere, and in particular in Story County, and they're already here. I mean, I've got a map hanging on my bulletin board that shows everyone that we've gotten in Story County that have filed a manure management plan. I mean, I think it's just it's a fact of life that they're here to stay. And, you know, if the days of, and several of these emails that I've gotten are, you know, the way that my grandpa used to raise hogs, the way that my dad raised hogs, and that's the way that my father raised hogs when I was growing up. But there just isn't the appetite with farmers today to raise hogs that way. It's very labor intensive, and this is a way that, and in particular, I think young farmers see that this is a way that they can kind of get their foot in the door. They can they can make some money. The thought that the manure, the byproduct of this operation, is an unwanted toxic waste is not the fact. A lot of these guys do this to get the manure, to replace the input costs that they have when they go to buy chemical fertilizers.
Sure. So instead of putting fertilizer on, they're using the manure.
And I think that's the motivation behind why a lot of these enterprises start up. This is a way for them to control their input costs.
Well, and I agree with what both of you just said, but I think it is important that government, you know, starting with us and moving right on up through the state, recognizes that just because it's the way we've been doing it doesn't mean it's the appropriate way for us to continue to do it. And the simple fact is, what Iowa has that is going to continue to draw the possibility of these confinements is we've got the ground that can take the manure. And so we're going to see more and more and more of this. And somebody a lot higher than our pay grade is going to have to figure out what kind of major impacts this is or is not having. Is it as simple as it's a replacement for the fertilizer, and so we can all view it as, you know, yeah, there may be some smell associated and go. But if we bury our head in the sand of, yeah, this is just the way it is and the way it's going to be, I think we're not doing our job. Now, that said, I agree with everything you just said. I completely recognize that we're an agricultural community, and I fully support that. But we all have a responsibility to hand things off to the next generation better than we found them. I'm not saying that this is not doing that, but we need to be looking closely.
And I've got some real concerns when you talk to a person from the DNR, from the field office, and he flat tells you that due to budget cuts, we don't have the personnel to come out and inspect these if they do trigger the master matrix, the DNR doesn't have the personnel to come out and inspect them like they're supposed to make sure that they're being put in properly. And, you know, is that something that maybe some of the counties can have some control over? But one of the reactions from one of the other supervisors was, you know, the amount of these things that we have in our county, it'll break our budget. So we don't have the personnel in our health department to go out and monitor these things. So, I mean, it's yeah. I don't know what.
Or
the
do we have
is.
The expertise really?
Yeah, exactly. I mean.
Learn how to put in deep pits and, yeah.
Well, I landed in Des Moines at about 9:15 this morning, and so from about 8:45 on, as we were coming over, I was just looking down, and I'm paying particular attention now, but I was going, okay, confinement. You know, as you're flying in that way, that is what Iowa is in a lot of ways, and I think I'm fully supportive of us discussing. Some version of the resolution that conservation passed. I've been pretty plain that I think our role is different from the conservation boards, but I think it makes perfect sense for us to discuss it. And it is an item that, starting with local boards, it's going to have to be addressed and dealt with as we go. And so I think we're taking the right steps. And all I was saying about this manure management plan is I am viewing this one differently because of its proximity to a major water source, and specifically Hickory Grove, than I was viewing the plan that the men's brought.
Okay. There are no other comments regarding this. Board, what is your pleasure regarding item four?
I'll make a motion that we acknowledge receipt of the manure management plan for Richland Finisher Farm.
Second.
It's been moved and second to acknowledge the receipt of the manure management plan for the Richland Finishers there. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call. Toop?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay. Going on to...
Thank you, Margaret.
Thanks, Margaret.
The agenda, we've got quite a bit on here. Lisa, I think you come up a little later, right? So you're not on the consent. And let me make sure that one other item for the board, I do want to call attention to the fact, huh? We're done with that. But I did want to point out that there was an item on the consent agenda that I wanted to make sure we noted, that there will be no Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday, July 10th. That was listed there, okay?
We do have a canvas that morning.
We have a canvas that morning, and I will be calling in to participate on that.
I think we'll let you off the hook.
But I can call in. Right. But
right. I'll be here, but you can hold one of you guys.
Yeah. Okay. All right, moving on then. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, next item is number 9 on the agenda, which is a... no public hearing, and then additional item 10 is consideration of resolution 12-109 approving participation in the mental health and disability service planning. Deb Shilroff. Thank you, Deb, for remaining.
Thank you. On June 15th, we had about 12 counties in this room, CPCs and County Board of Supervisor members, talking about what's behind Senate File 2315 and regionalizing and how to best go about do that. And a lot of good discussion in terms of the core services, the similarities in the counties around the table, and just how best to move forward. No formal decisions made, of course. But there was a document that came out of that meeting in the form of a resolution to allow CPCs or community services staff like myself from these counties to continue meeting and discussing the possibility of regionalizing. And all this resolution does is allow the planning process to take place. The ultimate decision, of course, rests with the Board of Supervisors. And if indeed this is something, a region we would want to pursue, eventually it comes to fruition in the form of a 28E agreement. Are there any questions or comments?
Just a comment. I think you've said one. Is it one county or two have already passed this from what you've heard?
Yeah, from that meeting, and I'll go through the counties quickly as far as who was at that meeting. The representation was there from Franklin County, Hamilton County, Webster County, Calhoun, Guthrie, Green, Audubon, Boone, Madison, Story, Marshall, Hardin. I believe that's it. Webster County voted a week ago to go ahead and join County Social Services, which is currently an 8 or 9 county region. So they will be joining that region instead of forming with other counties. Right. And I will let the board know as well, since that meeting on the 15th, I had also been contacted by Polk County. They are interested in having a meeting with Polk, Warren, Dallas, and Story counties. So
and Story.
Okay. So since there are no formal decisions or anything made at this point in time, we're in discussion phases. I think it is well worth our time to talk with and look at all options.
Well, I think it behooves the board to have as much information as we possibly can before we make a decision. I just want to make sure that we don't obligate ourselves to anything, as I know we don't in this, other than participating in what it might be.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I didn't individually list the counties in that resolution.
I don't think
because I think we need to be flexible. I think people are going to come and go kind of as this discussion takes place, so it gives us that flexibility.
I move adoption of Resolution 12-109.
It's been moved and seconded the adoption of Resolution 12-109, approving the participation in the mental health and disability service planning. Is there any further comments? Hearing none, roll call. Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 12-109 is adopted. Thank you.
Okay. See you again in a minute.
Lisa Markley, consideration of Resolution 12-107, which is the Appropriations Amendment.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Uh-huh. Happy anniversary.
Oh, you too?
Yeah.
What?
My stepson's 8 today.
Wife and daughter in Spain, so that way I'm off the hook.
I don't know. I think
and because of the time difference, I can't send flowers. So.
There you go.
Congratulations.
Part of the budget process, part of the cash management process is when you adopt the budget in March, that's all fine and good, except the departments have no ability to spend any money until you appropriate those dollars. The appropriation I'm putting on the agenda now because there will be funds expended next week for the next upcoming year. The appropriation amendment that you have in front of you is for 50% across the board. Okay, every department, I presented it to you as a 50% appropriation for all departments. We've talked long and hard about this throughout the year. It is a very useful cash management tool for us. I have preliminary numbers as far as ending fund balances. Obviously, I've got a few more days of revenues to come in, but as we sit right now, I know where we're at. And by the way, I did tell Deb today that $543,000 did come in for the rest of the mental health funds that we've been watching for. So that helps our ending fund balance there a bit. Right now, if we close the books today, which I have on expenses, the general fund would be at 24%. And that is... as it sits, and you guys are pursuing the $500,000 that we loaned to the TIF fund. So that brings us up a hair too. Supplemental at 37%, which was good news for us, I thought. And mental health fund at 9.5%.
The supplemental was 30.
37. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how we could have done any better than that. I mean, you think about how tightly we tried to budget this thing and where we were coming out of the budget. I want to commend you, Lisa. I mean, what I'm hearing is we know it's going to be north of 24% in the general fund, and we may get close to 25%, which is the goal that we have set every year. I think that sounds outstanding.
With that said, I still, being the conservative budgeter that I am, would like to recommend that we only do 50% to start the fiscal year. We can appropriate as needed throughout the year. I'm going to be coming back to you in July already with a budget amendment, to be quite honest with you. I have numerous situations in which things have happened in the last couple months and conservation is a big one in this case, because there was a lot of projects that they amended into their FY12 budget thinking they were going to get done, and a lot of them didn't happen. They're going to need it right away in FY13. Secondary roads, they're right in the middle of their projects. They did not budget for any dollars. They were planning on spending all their dollars, they thought, in FY12 of the capital project. They didn't spend them all, so they're going to have to spend some in FY13. So I know I've got at least three or four departments that are going to need amendments right off the bat. But that being said, I would strongly recommend that we start the year here appropriating only 50%. The other thing that we have to factor in is while the mental health fund came in at 9.5%, the general fund's probably still going to have to loan them money to make it first. Obviously, they're not even, we don't even know when we're going to get dollars there. So,
yes, and that was one of the questions that I'm glad you mentioned. It's still hanging out there. A lot of counties are having to consider whether or not to loan some dollars, transfer dollars in the mental health fund, which has to be paid back in the calendar year.
Fiscal
year, excuse me. And so we have to be in a position to have that capacity if it becomes absolutely necessary. While this earlier to indicate the 50% or 75%, whatever, I think based upon the unknowns, I certainly think it's appropriate for us to consider that at this point. If it passed, I would suggest again that we duly notify all of the departments regarding the dollars that have been appropriated and so forth. So.
Yeah, and I can certainly do that. I did send the new budget sheets out to all the departments a week and a half ago, giving them their line item numbers and such, and it had the full budget amount there. And I did explain to them that while the full budget amount was there, I was coming to the board this week to recommend 50%. So,
if
they're paying attention, they will see that or hear that.
Good. Okay. Board.
I move approval of Resolution 12107, Appropriations Amendment at 50%.
It's been moved and seconded the approval of Resolution 12107 and the appropriation amount at 50%. Any further discussion? Just mostly, again, thank you, Lisa, for your continual and I hate to use the word conservative, but the frugal manner in which you
conservative's not a bad word. You don't need.
Oh, what do you mean? That's you. Let's do your fiscal accountability.
Thank you.
I definitely appreciate that as you help guide us through this process. So with that, Sanders?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton? Aye. Resolution 12107 is adopted. Okay. All right. Okay, then.
Back to our friend Deb.
Agency report.
Welcome back.
And our departmental report.
Yeah.
Good.
And thank you for entertaining all of my items today. I kind of had a stockpile of them. But I will be brief on this report because you have a copy of it. We're looking at the period covering March through May. We served a total of 63 individuals through general assistance, issued 230 denials through that program during the quarter, and then we had 24 people apply but did not return to finish the application process. Under rent, as being one of our primary types of assistance, we spent $18,451 during the quarter, $1,818 in utilities, and $4,408 in miscellaneous, which typically involve burials, transportation, and medications. In substance abuse, we assisted 18 individuals during the quarter and spent $35,593 to cover hospitalization and court-related fees for court-committed substance abuse treatment. A portion of these dollars were bills that from the previous quarter that we had received from an MHI, one of the institutions that offers substance abuse treatment. Asset, during the quarter, the admin team, we did our annual review of policies and procedures and brought those minor changes to, I brought those to the Board of Supervisors for approval. The admin team worked closely with three agencies in clarifying budget information for fiscal year 13. And we also met with representatives from HRDA and Eiley Ball to help in the transition of transportation and community mental health services. And then our new county volunteer, as you know, Diane Christensen's term is up, and we have a new county volunteer, Craig Ogilvie, and he is a dean, in physics and agronomy at Iowa State University. He hails from New Zealand and has been here in the States since 2000. And is very interested in community involvement and volunteering. And so I've met with him, and he attended the asset meeting in June and is very interested in being the volunteer. So I'm happy that we have that opening filled.
Craig has a daughter the same age as my daughter. He's a good guy. He'll do a nice job for us.
Other activities. Community Services continued its efforts as being a testing county for the case management module for Community Services Network. That's our database. And our goal is to have all the client information entered in to CSN by the end of next quarter. And that's just the case management information. We have all of our other mental health information entered in because we've been on that system now for a little over a year. Community Services, as you know, we moved to the lower level of the Human Services Center, and we have settled in very nicely. I do want to publicly thank Al Hahn and his facilities department and Sandra Hunter and IT for getting us moved, getting us networked and hooked up. We're very thankful for all of the help that those two departments offered. Lastly, the legislature passed Senate File 2315 dealing with disability system redesign, so we are going through the process, as you know, as to how we're going to manage that. Also during the quarter, the Board of Supervisors passed a resolution requesting the assistance of the State Auditor's Office to go in and audit Richmond Center and Community and Family Resources. They have turned... Those agencies have turned that matter over to an attorney. So that's who I've been in communication with. His name is Stu Cochran, and he's out of a law firm in Fort Dodge. And after some communication back and forth in terms of what our contracts allow us to do and specifically what information we're looking for, and he had some conversations with Andy Nielsen through the State Auditor's Office as well. It sounds like they'll have the information ready for us by July 5th. I'm waiting to hear back from the State Auditor's Office as to when they think they'll be able to go in, given that new deadline. And we're still waiting for the Richmond Center's fiscal year 11 audit.
So I just want to make sure I'm following what is going on. So Richmond Center is required by contract to provide us with an audit. They don't provide it. We keep asking for it. They keep telling us that we're going to get it, we're going to get it, we're going to get it. We never get it. We request that the state auditor comes in and looks at it. As soon as we request the state auditor comes, they go and hire an attorney. And now the attorney is telling us that, oh, yeah, 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 now you're really going to get all your stuff?
This is an attorney that CFR has used, and this is an individual who's been to a couple of the asset meetings. I believe he was at the one in December,
right,
and then one again in January. But yes, that's who I'm communicating with is the attorney. So I will continue to keep you informed as to the progress of the state audit.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Liaison assignments and committee updates.
Pass.
I met with, I'm not even going to be able to say it, Connect Iowa.
Okay. Oh, good.
Ann and I and LaVon Schultz and Sarah, can't think of her last name, from the chamber office.
Clausen.
Clausen, and then Charlie from downstairs. So we're just going to continue to kind of work with them and hopefully try to get some of the local smaller town officials involved and try to do an audit and see exactly where they're at as far as what kind of service they're receiving. And we're just, like I told Leanne, I think that day that Charlie was in here, we kind of directed him to let Leanne know that we wanted him to spend some staff time on that, and Leanne just asked that I would again reiterate today that we're directing the planning and development to spend staff time working with Connect Iowa to see what the broadband possibilities are here in the county.
I don't know how you guys feel about it, and I don't know what we're going to learn, what we're going to find out from doing this audit of broadband. But I'm going to tell you what, you want to impact some of our outlying residents greatly. This is how you do it.
We were fortunate enough to get DSL service where we live, but before that we had a satellite internet, and that's, I can tell you what, that is just slightly faster than dial up, but a whole lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, I just had a conference call, a phone call with Deb a little bit concerning items on the agenda today and making sure that I had a little bit of understanding of the request that was being brought forth by Heartland and others. And the only other item that was not part of my liaison assignment, but as you all are aware, I joined the Ames Chamber and representatives from Iowa State and City Council in our annual fly-in, in their annual fly-in in Washington, D.C., to talk to our congressional delegations regarding some issues that impact Ames, rural water issues, the 13th Street expansion, the airport expansion, plus some issues that Iowa State was facing. And yesterday the committee met at the chamber office, and I joined them, and we sat down with Chrissy Vilsack, and mainly just to kind of update her of what we shared with our congressional delegations, recognizing that whoever is elected into that post, that we want to be sure that they are well aware of the issues that would have a great benefit to Story County and the city of Ames as well. And so it was a good hour-long meeting, and I think everything went extremely well. So she was very receptive, and I appreciate the opportunity to be updated regarding the request that we had shared with our congressional delegations while in D.C. So with that, that's about all I have. Oh, and this evening, we have a couple things on the agenda. We have the Ames MPO is there talking about their long-range planning transportation plan, and there will be some mention of the 28E agreement regarding some improvements to State Avenue for future consideration. And then the Ames Assessors Conference Board will have a very short meeting regarding the Special Appraisers Fund that need to be now consolidated into one rather than two separate ones. So that probably should last a minute and a half primarily. But we do need a quorum, or at least two members of the board, and I plan to attend. So hopefully you or Paul will be able to
I'll
be
handle
there
that one.
That,
you don't need to come over there. On your anniversary, especially.
Okay. All right. So with that, that's all I have. And now public comment number two. This is comment from the public on items not on the agenda. I see Mr. Eggers wasn't able to remain, so we'll probably have him at a later time. Anyone else that would like to comment on an item not on today's agenda? Okay. With that, then.
Move adjournment.
Support.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Meeting is adjourned. Thank you, one and all. Take a deep breath now. Do you have a chance to catch your breath a little bit?
It's been a wild few days. Deb, thanks.
Yes, thank you.